Welcome, fanatics, to the first ever Graycast. This is a monumental occasion here. I'm Adam Gray, joined by the veteran, not my brother, but as a lot of people think, the Rob Gray. How you doing today, Rob?
Not too bad. Graycast doesn't quite have the shine of, say, a Chromecast sound, but I like the catchiness of it, and I'm proud to be here for the inaugural event.
This is a long time in the making here.
It is.
This is big. Now, you also put on Twitter that this could be called Two Shades of Gray.
Yeah.
I've heard reaction to both. Some people say that's awful, and some people say it's awesome. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of down the middle on that. What do you think? Should it be the Gray Cast or Two Shades of Gray?
I only use that as a hashtag, so it wasn't necessarily a. I think there. I can see the pros and cons of that. Gray Cast is more concise, fits together.
Yeah.
You can make it look like that. You know, all caps gray, and then Cast with just the capital C.
Yeah.
I think that works. Anytime it can be, the fewer words, the better.
I agree.
Setting something up there.
We're slowly getting to, you know, you got the fall cast, you got the gray cast.
Mm-hmm.
If we can just slowly get everything around that, it'd be perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, once again, too, this the gray cast is brought to you by our good friends, Heartland Flags, Heartland Flagpoles. Stop in and see them. Stop at their website, heartlandflagpoles.com. You know where Heartland Flag will be flying high tomorrow, Rob?
Where?
Thunderhead.
Oh, yeah.
We got our big recruiting party. I will have the Cyclone Fanatic flag that Heartland Flags created for us flying high right outside there. Stop by, see us. Get there by 6 o'clock, maybe probably even a little bit earlier, Rob, if you want to try to get a table.
Mm-hmm.
Or a parking space. You might have to park far away because it's going to be a big event. We got our special guests coming down. From what I've told, Rob, I think about 20 of them are coming down. So we got quite a few. Should be a good time, as always. Chris will do what he does best, getting up there interviewing, and obviously fans will have a chance to meet everybody. So
yeah.
You going to be there?
It's always a great time, yeah. I'll be there.
What are you drinking tomorrow, Rob?
Probably scotch and maybe IPA.
You know, me and you, we might disagree on a lot of things, but we agree on a good quality scotch.
Yes.
And that's what I like about you.
And vice versa.
Yep. And a good IPA. You know, IPAs to me are hit or miss. I either love them or I hate them.
Mm-hmm.
But most scotches, there's some that I don't care for, but gosh, just at the end of a long day, you pour me a little scotch, drink that before bed. I'm telling you guys, that's how you live right there.
Yeah, just on the rocks.
Yeah.
Just on the rocks.
And not a lot of ice for
me.
I have that big ice cube, so it just depends. But sometimes I just like to put one tiny little ice cube in there just to give it a little chill.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Oh, it's perfect. It warms the heart and the gullet.
Yeah, it does. You know, it's 11 o'clock on a Wednesday, and I'm now thirsty.
So I'm right there with you, man.
Maybe we get done with this. We go get ourselves something.
Why not?
Do we have to talk about last night's game? I think we probably should.
I think we, yes, it will be required conversation here.
So Cyclones lose a tough one last night, 67-65 down in Texas. I guess what stood out to you, Rob?
Well, what stood out was the two hallmarks of this team: slow starts and getting in funks that you just, I know for fans, you're just tearing their hair out saying, why is the ball movement not there? Why is this long two being put up there? You know, and the fact that this team can not only play with anybody, but can come back on anybody. Yes, Texas is a bottom feeder this season, but when you've got Jared Allen, you've got talent, you've got, as Chris had pointed out, a top five recruiting class, a young team at home who's been good at home, you can come back in 3-4 minutes from such a terrible start where you get down 17, 30,
horrible
13.
Start.
I mean, 3 points. I mean, they had like one field goal in the first, what, 8 or 9 minutes, Jackson got 3 free throws after Thomas's 3.
Yep. They had 5 points the first 10.5 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
Right around there. And then Jackson got the 3 free throws to
That's
make
right.
8 points.
Right after that. Yep.
Horrible start. And unfortunately, it's been a kind of a theme for the year. And really, I say year, it's kind of been a theme that's gone back all the way through the Hoiberg era,
mm-hmm.
too, where Iowa State has started slow. And even though they start slow, it doesn't mean they're out of the game as Iowa State fans see. What is it with the slow starts?
I think if I could pinpoint it,
yeah.
they wouldn't have any slow, or they'd have very few slow starts.
Steve would be calling you up right now being like, tell me, Rob. Tell me what we need to do.
Yeah, checks in the mail.
Isn't it surprising, though, just because this is a very experienced team, that they start so slowly out of the gates? And, you know, yesterday I thought was a little bit different than some of the other games. Yesterday, obviously, they weren't playing very good. Defensively wasn't horrible, but wasn't good either. They're giving a lot of slips. But let's be honest, they were missing shots too. I mean, you go 2 for 19 to start the game, you're going to struggle. But let's look. I mean, Indiana State, they got down 9, came back, won that game. Gonzaga down 15 most of that entire first half, made it a game. But when you play good teams or you play on the road, what typically happens is you put so much energy just to get back, you have barely anything left in the tank the last 4 minutes. And I thought, I mean, you saw it for Iowa State defensively the last 4 minutes last night. Texas was able to get to the rim rather easily for their buckets, and Iowa State couldn't get a stop at the end of that game.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely, there's something to that. You know, you expend that extra energy, and when you get caught up or nearly caught up, you need to take a deep breath because you've expended all that energy, but you can't at the same time if you want to pull it out. Now, they have pulled off some of those games, obviously, when they came back. Kansas was a big comeback, and when that went to overtime, Mason missed that shot. I mean, you know, you figure, boy, they're at Kansas, valiant effort, but they don't pull that out. They found a way to pull it out. And what's sad is, and as Naz had said in advance of that game, that win means little to nothing if we can't follow it up with a win at Texas. And, and sadly, it's not totally true in terms of, I think, how they feel about where they're at right now. I think that's exactly right. But nonetheless, having that win on your resume, particularly with a lot of opportunities still out there for good or for ill, that was just a necessary win to throw on there, unless you get a West Virginia on the road, unless you make sure you beat Baylor at home.
Baylor at home now has turned – I hate the must win, and I put that up on the boards last week for the West Virginia game. So I'm not going to say must win, but that is a monumental game now as far as seeding and just making sure that you feel okay come Selection Sunday. Don't you agree? I mean, because there's not – let's be honest, Rob, winning at Kansas State is very difficult. If me and you had to choose, I'm guessing you feel the same way as me. I'm not putting an Iowa State getting a victory down at Kansas State next weekend or next week.
I'm leaning toward, you know me, I'm a glass half full guy.
I like this about you, Rob. I like it.
I'm leaning toward them getting that one barely.
I like
K-State is a lot like Iowa State this year in the sense that they have also been that team, and again, most of the teams in the Big 12 have been like this. How do you figure this team out? I think arguably to Kansas fans, they have a hard time figuring their team out. They don't see how a week before they went to Kentucky and controlled that game completely at Rupp Arena.
Yep.
And then they get up on Iowa State, a team that had to shoot its way back into the game, did it obviously with defense too, forced a lot of turnovers, which Kansas has been prone to, that I think even Kansas fans are scratching their head a little bit. They've seen enough teams that win the Big 12 and go into the tournament and they're out in the round of 32 or the Sweet 16 in recent years. The Big 12 is just so nuts. I've never seen a Power 5 conference in which the worst team is a decent team. Bare minimum. They're not below average.
Yeah.
They're at least, I think, a slightly above average team when you look at the bottom of the standing. So,
are you talking Oklahoma right now, Texas, for those two?
I think those teams are you plop them somewhere else, I think they've got a chance to be 500 in the league.
Yeah. Especially when Oklahoma's got a healthy Woodard. I mean, makes a huge difference right there. And he obviously missed some time earlier in Big 12 season too. So,
and Texas with such a young team, if I were a fan of them, and clearly there are a lot of Texas fans, but obviously not a lot of them showed up at the game last night. But I guess understandably when they're 9-14 coming in. But I don't understand how, particularly against a team like Iowa State, they don't get the ball to Jared Allen every single time.
Well,
he had a nice game, but there were points in that second half and during that comeback where he just kind of disappeared.
Yeah.
He'd get free, and they didn't have their heads up, and they couldn't –
Well, did you notice too, Rob, and I loved it as an Iowa State fan wanting Iowa State to win, he all of a sudden just decided he wanted to start shooting threes. Hey, good for you, kid. You know, being a pick and pop gives you a little bit added value, and that's great. But Texas was destroying Iowa State when they were able to get to the lane because they were either scoring or it seemed like every time they drove the lane or got inside, Iowa State was getting called for a foul.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they went through a time where they were just loving that 18-foot jump shot, playing right into what Iowa State wanted. So that was good. Have you ever seen the movie Little Giants?
I have not.
You haven't? Okay. Well, or Little Giants, or even I think The Replacements is it too, where the guys can't catch the ball, so they put like some stick and stuff in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that Iowa State can get away with putting some sort of stickum on their hands? How many almost rebounds and almost steals did Iowa State have last night?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where they tip the ball, it looks like Iowa State forced 13 turnovers. It could have been 30. I mean, it to me, it was unbelievable where it looked like Iowa State was going to get the steal and they couldn't do it and Texas would get it and then Texas would end up getting a bucket. And that just to me was just kept being a backbreaker for Iowa State because they couldn't get over that hump. They made all this big comeback in the first half, got it to six. Second half, they made another nice comeback. They're down three, they're tied, they're doing all this stuff, but they couldn't get that one huge defensive stop they needed. I think they might have gotten two and then they couldn't do anything, but yep. They couldn't get enough of them in a row to really get over the hump. And that was I don't know what you can do as a coach on that. Rebounding, they can do a better job of, but at some point when that ball's in front, you got to grab the damn ball.
Yeah, exactly. And the lack of a dominant pick. I mean, when you watch them get those almost rebounds, it was somebody like Monte Morris who, talk about energy. I mean, that guy, the minutes he plays, what he expends and still has in the tank is incredible. But they're just at the top of their leap. They're at the top of their leap, swatting at that ball, almost getting it. Then a guy like Matt Thomas is almost getting it, you know, before the other guy gets it. The big size differential and I think athleticism differential when it comes to the bigs against a lot of these Big 12 teams is the reason that you just can't count. You've got to do the best you possibly can rebounding the basketball. Mm-hmm. You've got to create a lot of turnovers. 13 is lower than you want.
Obviously. Especially against a team like Texas, who was ninth in the Big 12 as far as turnover ratio.
Yeah, and they you know, so Deontay Burton again with six. I mean, talk about him. I mean, mercurial is the word I'll use for him because he's, man, when he is good, and he's hitting that three late to keep him in, hits that other shot, you know, and I got six steals again. He's got six steals in back-to-back games. And he's not, after the game, you have a sense that he turned the ball over eight times. He's averaging 2.3 turnovers a game.
Yeah.
That's not bad considering the steals he's getting. But then again, you get those weird – he creates a more difficult shot for himself a number of times. Or you get just the inexplicable, why did you make that pass for the easy turnover? I mean, you take away just the weird ones. It's like, what made you think that pass wasn't going to get stolen?
Yeah.
And his turnover rate is much lower. I mean, obviously George was, you know, early in the season, they wanted to compare him because of his versatile game, very different game than the great George Niang. But George turned the ball over more. He also assisted it consistently more than Deontay. Although Deontay, when he's on with his passing game, it's
really
nice.
He's had a 10 assist game this year. Yeah. We saw good Deontay and bad Deontay last night, and the two plays that stick out to me the most, the first one, he made that great steal, and he looked like he could have gone in for a layup, and for some he's left-handed, and he loves going left,
yep.
And instead of just blowing by the guy right on the right side, because I think it was Allen, and Allen wasn't going to be able to keep up with him, he tried to cross over, kicked it off Allen's foot, Iowa State regained possession, but that was a good play where he made the steal, and a bad play all at once,
yep.
Within half a second. And then, obviously, the last one, I think he made the tying three with under a minute to go. You know what I'm talking about now?
Mm-hmm.
Wide open, and he dribbles the ball and waits for the guy to come out for him to shoot it, and he makes it.
So, yep.
But you're sitting there like, why do you have to make that more difficult than it is, Deontay?
Yeah.
And the answer is because he's Deontay Burton.
Exactly.
And you got to love him for it because, let's be honest, Iowa State is going to go as far as we think that hope they can go in the NCAA tournament and Big 12 as far as Deontay Burton will take him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Monte Morris is going to be a consistent player. For mm-hmm. You have a pretty good idea what you're going to get from him. You know, Matt and Naz, their shots are coming and going, but for the most part, you know what you're getting out of their game. Deontay Burton, man, from second to second, you don't know what you're going to get out of him.
Yeah, exactly. And a great point about Monte, even when he struggled shooting the ball, almost all night.
Yeah.
He still had the high assists, no turnovers.
No turnovers, yep. And
the defense, he has improved so much in that front, and I'm sure that comes with, how competitive he is, but also just the work he's put in to be more physical, to be a little bit thicker, and to just know how to defend guys better. But, yeah, I totally agree. Some people have said maybe Matt Thomas is kind of the bellwether of the team. If Matt Thomas doesn't produce well, we've already seen that. When Matt was, you know, perhaps hurting a little bit more, just wasn't quite on against Kansas, scored nothing, they still won.
They still won. Yep.
Deontay Burton goes out there and puts up 2 points and four turnovers and two rebounds and four fouls and plays 11 minutes. Iowa State's not going to win many basketball games.
No, they're not. I guess I have another question for you as far as Monte Morris goes. We've seen it now a couple games recently where he's not on the ball quite as often. They're running him on a lot of back screens, trying to get him open, almost like he's a shooting guard. Do you think it's because of the way other teams are starting to guard him a little bit more, or do you think that's just Steve saying, I got to try to find other ways to get him open looks? Because let's be honest, for 3.5 years, Monte Morris has not been a off-the-screen spot-up shooting type of player. Well, I mean, you know what I'm talking about? Last night, he was – You made a good point as far as the energy he has, and it was unbelievable even more last night because he was running back and forth on offense like crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the latter. I think you're trying to get him more opportunity to stab open looks because obviously he's going to draw their best the best defender, you know, the best front court guard court defender from the other team every single time, and if you can play him off the ball a little bit. You know, he's going to have a chance for more open looks. He's really good at draining the long, too. I don't think it's a bad shot from him if it's open at all because he hits it at a high percentage. But he's also a good three. He's shown himself to be a pretty good at least three-point shooter.
Absolutely.
And you also give him a little bit more space. He can create a little bit better because I like that idea. I know there are other things that are head-scratchers like Bowie and Young on the floor at the same time. A lot of lineups that kind of scratch your head out a little bit, but
yep.
At the same time, I think Prone's still experimenting a little bit with these guys because with as much experience as they have, it has been so hit or miss with a Bowie or a Holden or a Young. Although you're always getting the effort from Young, but you're not always getting much, if any, production.
You're getting the freshman mistakes.
Yeah,
they're pretty common. Yeah. You know? Do you think it's as much experimenting out of Prone as just from game to game, you don't know what you're getting out of those three guys. Because you really – I mean, that was the X factor last night for Iowa State is they had to get some sort of production out of Merrill Holden, and he didn't last past the first time out in either of the halves. Yeah. I mean, he got in foul trouble early, pretty much a non-factor, almost a negative factor. I'm not trying to kill him, but it was not one of his better games. Solomon Young got beat on the pick and roll quite a bit. And then you see Daryl Bowie come in and have a nice productive set on offense, but the last 4 minutes he really struggled on the defensive end as well. I mean, if I'm Steve Prohm, I got to be sitting there being like, man, if I could just get anything out of these guys consistently, I'm not even talking 10 points a game. I'm talking 2, 3, 4 points a game, 6 rebounds, some good defense. Iowa State probably has 3, 4 more wins right now.
No, I wouldn't disagree. I'd say at least a couple more. I think Bowie was good last night. He did a nice job getting open as other guys drew the attention to the defense and finishing, you know, because the last thing you want is him on the free throw line. So he finished really nicely through contact sometimes.
Yeah. Yep.
And you're going to get that from him sometimes. I think the tough thing for Coach Prohm is, you know, you've kind of established what these guys' identities are. And you certainly can't play one of them all the time, although Solomon played that 30-plus minute game at Kansas and really shined in a lot of ways, particularly on the defensive end and got some big boards as well. But, you know, it's almost like you're rolling the dice because Holden came back after some issues, had a really nice game rebounding the basketball, did some good things. Excuse me. And Bowie's had moments earlier in the season as well where – particularly on the offensive end, but sometimes on the glass as well, and on the defensive end. So you're getting, like you said, you don't know what you're going to get from either one of those guys. And I'm sure it's frustrating for those guys, too, as you've seen the struggles. And as Coach Prohm alluded to before the game, in his news conference on Monday, Solomon Young's handled the ups and downs of playing time better than anyone on the team, which I think bodes very well going forward. But as you said, you know, you're going to see a lot of glaring freshman mistakes, no matter how, you know, fastidious he is in terms of attention to detail, and which I think he's working hard at it because of how well he usually defends. But
you know, and he was put in a tough spot when he broke that wrist or hurt his – was it wrist, hand, broke, whatever?
Yeah, I can't remember. All I can think of is how Jackson had his wrist issue, but yeah.
But, so, I mean, Solomon missed, what, a couple weeks maybe?
Yeah, he did early on.
And if that was to happen this year to Matt or Monte or Naz, they'd be able to pick right back up because they have a lot of game experience. You'd take them a game or two for Russ. But when you're a freshman playing in the Big 12, that can really throw off your whole season because in the non-conference, that's where Iowa State's playing, let's be honest, a lot of patty cakes. And that's where the freshman can get confidence. They can get a lot of minutes. Coach can throw them out there. Wasn't able to do it. Put them behind the eight ball. But, you know, going forward, they got to get one of those, either Young or Holden. They have to do better than what we saw last night. Both of them played a combined 22 minutes. Young scored 0 points, 0 rebounds, 0 block shots.
Yeah.
That in 14 minutes of play, mm-hmm. can't have that. And Holden, like I said, foul trouble early. Then he really couldn't stop Allen to start the second half, and then he got pulled quickly there as well. He had 2 rebounds.
Yep.
That's just, that's not good enough, Rob.
No, you need like you said, at least you don't even need points. You need 4 to 6 rebounds for those guys if they're playing 12 to 14 minutes or 18 minutes, and then one of those guys maybe gets 6 boards, get some points.
And you don't even need block shots, but you need them to alter shots. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Just be a presence down there where they make it a little more difficult. Solomon Young did a great job against Kansas of doing that. He wasn't blocking a ton of shots, but whenever they would drive the lane, he was there. And yeah. they started missing some shots inside that they didn't miss in the first half because of his presence, I thought.
Sure.
Anything else we want to talk about in the last night's game?
Not really last night's game. I think it was, you know, we've kind of gone over that thoroughly.
Where does Iowa State go from here? Obviously, they got Oklahoma coming up on Saturday at home. We're both predicting a win there.
Yes.
Oklahoma right now is dead last in the conference. They're 2-8, 8-14. Hopefully Iowa State gets off to a fast start in that one. So Iowa State wins that game, Rob. They'll be 7-5.
Yep.
Let's go through the rest of the schedule. Let's do a quick prediction of where Iowa State finishes. At Kansas State, you think they win that game?
I think they do. The seniors that have been on the team for a long time have won at Bramlage. I like the matchups. I don't think, you know, Johnson can be a load inside, but he's also prone to foul trouble. If you drive the lane like you can, even with your guards, you maybe get him a little bit in foul trouble. I like a lot of the guys, like Awundu and you know, Wade's had his moment. Stokes is good. You know, they got a number of players that can do good things, and that's why they have a good overall record, and they're in almost every Big 12 game they've played. I just have a feeling that on the heels of that Texas game, they're going to string a couple together, and people are going to breathe a little bit easier. It's never easy to win a Pro Bowl, but as we're learning, it's not easy. Heck, to win in the Big 12 this year, period.
No.
Let alone win on the road, no matter who you're playing. I'm basing that, you know, somewhat on matchups. I think one of those three, you know, whether it's Monte, Naz, Matt, maybe it's another big game for Burton. One of those guys just goes off in that game, and the Cyclones are able to sail off with the second straight win from Manhattan.
Okay, so you got them at 8-5. I'm going to go with a loss there. Main reason, I've been to the Octagon at Doom plenty of times.
Yep.
Very impressed with that place to play. I think the fans do a really good job of getting after the other team.
Yep.
And I've seen a lot of heartbreaking losses. I was down there when Iowa State had a chance. They were still in the Big 12 race. And they went down there. They're up 12 points. I shouldn't say that. Iowa State had a chance, and then they blew that 11-point lead to Baylor, where Baylor made like 6 threes out of the – never made fun of Scott Drew because he called his last time out eight minutes to go. They come in, and Iowa State never lost in Hilton back then, and I think they made 6 straight threes. Iowa State lost, so they are barely hanging on for a chance in the Big 12. And then they were down at Kansas State. They had a 12-point lead, and they just absolutely collapsed.
Yep. Isn't there that inbounds play?
Where Niang just threw it to what's-his-name for an easy dunk. Yep. Yeah, I was there for that. And I've been at a lot of other games where we don't win. So, me as a fan, it's almost like Texas. People forget Iowa State's lost a lot of heartbreaking games in Texas, a lot. You go back and look, overtime games, too. I think they've only won one time there in the last 10, 12 years.
Yeah, and I think they've won twice their period.
Period, yeah.
So
it's hard to win in the Big 12. So, I got them at 7-6. You got them at 8-5. One thing I want to hit on before we go through the rest of the schedule too, you know, you hit on how every game is close. The biggest victory Iowa State's got all Big 12 season was at Oklahoma State. And if you remember correctly, that was a close game throughout. And then Iowa State towards the end of that game, I mean, I think it was like a 4-point game with 3 minutes to go, and Iowa State ended up winning by 10.
Mm-hmm.
But every other game, if you look at it, 3 points, 5 points, 5 points. So you're right. To win in the Big 12, the difference, the margin of error is very slim. Very, very slim.
Exactly.
All right. So after Kansas State, we got TCU back at home.
That's a win.
You got a rebound after they beat you down there. So right now you got them at 9-5. I got them at 8-6. Then they go on the road down in Lubbock, Texas Tech.
And this is where I kind of I think we're going to see them closing in different ways. I see this as winnable and slash losable as K-State, even though the atmosphere isn't. Yes, I've been to Bramlage a few times covering games, and it is a great atmosphere.
It is, isn't it? I think people I saw Kansas fans making fun of Kansas State, saying it's only full for when we play there.
They make fun of everybody.
When I've been there, it's full for Iowa State. I promise you that, and it's a good crowd too. Mm-hmm. So
for sure, I'm going to have them somehow not getting it done at Tech.
Yeah, me as well. I just think it's a bad matchup. Tech is one of those physical teams, slow it down, that you typically see Iowa State really struggle against, especially on the road, because teams at home can dictate the tempo a lot mm-hmm. more than they typically do on the road. And you know what? Tech's not a great team, but they're a very solid team, well coached.
Yep.
I think they'll lose that game. So right now you got them at 9-6,
yep.
and I got them at 8-7.
Yep.
And then they come home, number 6 Baylor.
Yeah, I'm pretty leery of that game, given how they've performed against Baylor in recent. Not that they've had a couple of pretty darn good games against Baylor, particularly on the road this season, where they they're up late.
Yeah.
But end up going down by 2.
I still say, Rob, for 36 minutes, that was the best basketball Iowa State's played all year. For 36 minutes.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the last 4 minutes, they struggled. Now, the best game, obviously, was Kansas. But for Kansas, shoot, the first 25 minutes of that game, Iowa State struggled in a lot of areas, too. So, that Baylor game, they played well in that game.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to pick another loss to Baylor at home.
Ooh, okay. So you got them at 9-7. We're going to tie it up here. I think they win that game. They got to beat Baylor at some point in time. I did not think that was a good matchup, but I really like the way Iowa State went after that zone. I think if Deonte Burton makes the right reads when they give him the ball on the top of the key, he's the X factor even more so in that game.
Yeah.
Because they're going to put a lot of pressure on him to make the right reads on the shot and the passes and everything. At home in a game that I think Iowa State's just got to win. I think they do it. So I think they're 9-7. You got them at 9-7 as well. And then they stay at home. They play Oklahoma State.
I think it's
as hot as any team in the country right now.
And great talent. I mean, we knew coming in with Evans and Forte and Carroll kind of breaking through.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of nice pieces around them. Are they a team that's going to sustain that and ride it towards something after their awful start to conference play? I think the Cyclones win this one. But again, it won't be – I mean, I don't think there might – I think there might not be a game this year. Maybe TCU, maybe they can manage to win by like 14-15 at home.
Yeah.
But I think it's single digits kind of all the way.
Do you know why I like Iowa State in this one? If you notice it, and people can go back and look, Monte Morris plays at his best when he's going up against other top-level mm-hmm. point guards. It brings out the best in him. Like, he wants everyone to know that he is the best point guard in the Big 12. You see how he does that against Kansas, against Frank Mason. Look at how he played against Evans the first time in Oklahoma State. Yep. You remember the start of that game? He was all over Evans getting mm-hmm. steals. It was a different player. You go look last night against Texas. I almost said something before the game. I was worried about Monte because Texas doesn't have any guard that really get his competitive juices going.
Yeah.
We saw him struggle against Iowa. Why? Bohannon wasn't a guy that got his competitive mm-hmm. juices going. Is that the reason? Maybe not, but that's how I look at it. I think he lives for the moment of competing against the best, and a lot of people still say that Evans is the best point guard in the Big 12, and I think that pisses off Morris, and I think he has a big game, and I think Iowa State wins that one by double digits. I do.
Okay. Well, I think it'll be a little bit more hard fought than that, but I think they do rebound from another one to Baylor. One aside, real quick, it's interesting. I like your route to 9-7 before this 10-7
line
because you have that Baylor win on top of it.
Yeah,
to pad the resume a little bit more.
Yeah, well, that's a good point.
So I hope you're right in that regard.
I hope we're wrong on a lot of these, and they just win every one.
They just win every single one.
Yeah. And then they got at West Virginia. They go to Morgantown for the last game of Big 12.
No.
No.
10-8.
I agree. Especially, Morgantown so far this year in the Big 12 has proven not to be – I mean, they've lost, what, 2 games there now?
I think so.
But still, they, for whatever reason, have not been a great matchup for Iowa State. I know they play a little bit physical, which physical teams in Iowa State don't go well hand-in-hand together. But they're a team that typically lives off of turnovers, and Iowa State's very good at taking care of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been a little frustrated with Iowa State's inability to beat them the last 2 years because of that.
Well, what they did at Hilton, though, was – I mean, I can't ignore that. That's where the matchup issues were pronounced. And those guys, you talk about maximizing every possession – To a degree, I mean, they're getting those offensive rebounds. I mean, what hurt the Cyclones the most in that, what was it, 13-point loss? But I don't remember what it ended up being. It was, I think it was...
They lost in that game by 13, 85-72.
It wasn't the turnovers as much as it was just the fact that they could not prevent, you know, West Virginia from getting just board after board after board. And I think a lot of second chances, too, or negating second chances for the Cyclones.
Well, the funny thing was in that game, West Virginia had 12 offensive rebounds. Iowa State had 12 offensive rebounds as well, which is crazy because Iowa State typically is not a good offensive rebounding team. You know, which probably means we shot a lot of bricks and they went way, you know, for long rebounds. But, yeah, I mean, let's be honest. I know a lot of the analytics guys say that rebounding's not one of the main things to look at, but you can look at a lot of times Iowa State's big struggles. And Iowa State, for them to be at their best, they got to play with a better tempo as far as pushing the ball down court. Well, it's hard to do that unless you get some sort of stops.
Yep.
And last night, Iowa State, when they would have a chance to get a steal or a rebound, Texas out, let's call it, they out-hustled them, right? They were getting all the loose balls, and Iowa State wasn't. And it really just took Iowa State was not able to get the easy buckets they needed to. And that's going to be Iowa State's Achilles heel all year. And it has been all year. Yeah. And I don't think it's not going to change at this point, is it, Rob?
Yeah, you've got to, you know, what you counter that with is the ability to get steals, the ability to force the other team into turnovers. Which is what they did in Kansas.
Well, 21 turnovers.
Yeah, another stark difference between that game and the game last night is they got some seeming breaks at Kansas. Now they did get the one at Texas where the ball corkscrewed around the rim.
I've
never seen one that far down then curl out. But in total, I felt like the bounces went their way a little bit better in Allen Fieldhouse, which hardly ever happens, and didn't do that so much down in Austin.
And a lot of times it is just about a bounce here or there could really flip a game. You know, I'm a big believer in momentum. I know a lot of people aren't, but I do think momentum's key, and Iowa State was never able to take over momentum. They got a little bit of a comeback, but they could never make that play to really kind of make a young Texas team that had lost a lot of close games really doubt themselves.
Yeah.
So, Rob, you wrote a great piece on Cyclone Fanatic. It's up now. If people haven't read it yet, I'm sure everyone has. It's probably gone national by now, I would imagine. You've been doing a great job writing the Where Are They Now articles.
Thank you.
I think this is, what, your fifth or sixth one you've done now?
Ooh.
Maybe even more than that?
Maybe even a few more. But, yeah, right in that range, yeah.
About one of the more fun Iowa State players to watch, Stevie Johnson. When you were interviewing Stevie and kind of going back and looking, what one thing stood out to you?
The one thing, well, a number of things did, but the fact that I was tying in that he played on the best hoops team, I mean, I'm going to say an Elite Eight, reaching the Elite Eight in 2000 and really being a team that would have won the national championship if they could have gotten through that game is better. I know they made a Final Four appearance in the 40s, but college basketball was very different back then. So I'm going to say that's Iowa State's best basketball team, played a key role, big on the boards, scored when called upon.
Big on the boards at 6'3", essentially, right?
Yeah, 6'4"-ish, maybe, yeah, but right in that range. Just a tremendous athlete and a tough-minded individual who took to that role completely well. And then, after that heartbreak, and as he said, he couldn't really appreciate it at the time because they knew there were little things that they didn't do in that game, regardless of everything, the double foul, the everything going against them down the stretch in Michigan
playing
State's
a home
backyard.
Game,
So that's sticking with him. But at the same time, you know, Paul Rhodes had been coming to him when he was a younger player and kind of joking with him after games, he should come out and play football, you know, as an early assistant. And they just kind of laugh it off, you know, Stevie said. And then as that season ended, Tony Alford, running backs coach, came out and said, you know, you've got eligibility. You could come to play football, which he hadn't done since part of his sophomore year of high school.
You really think about this. This is crazy that he did this.
It is.
It's. Could you imagine all of a sudden Deontay Burton getting done, and Matt Campbell being like, "Dude, you'd be a stud tight end."
Yeah.
Like you, because he would be. Mm-hmm. Like, we need you at tight end.
Yeah. I mean, it's. Fortunately, I don't think they'll need him with Chase Allen and some of these guys coming in. But yeah, what you're saying.
He did well.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he didn't jump off the stat sheet, but he was in at crucial times.
He had plenty of tackles, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he did. And what's stunning, he told me that I think the day of the spring game, he also attended the women's basketball banquet. So that's how close the seasons overlapped. And he had to, and you know, he said his football knowledge was just lacking because he hadn't played since early in high school. So he goes in there and he's like, I don't know what I can do. He was rooming with Reggie Hayward at the time, so he ran it by him. He's like, yeah, come on out.
Reggie, you know? One of the all-time greats
of
that state.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, to go out there and be productive and then be on the team that wins Iowa State's first bowl game, the former Insight.com, now Cactus Bowl, over Pittsburgh, you know, only 9-win team. You know, Coach McCartney told me in a text message just what a joy he was to coach. And to be able to make that turnaround, I thought it was funny because Stevie had mentioned that, you know, you can't be a dummy and play football. I mean, there are too many concepts, too many things where you've got to know where to be, you've got to know how to hit, you got to know how to do this. And it's moving so fast, and it's got to move like clockwork, and everybody's got to know exactly what they're in. Basketball, you can freestyle a little bit at times and just get by on athletic ability.
We see that a lot with Deontay Burton a lot.
and it's you can cover up some things, but not in that case. And I think just a really, really nice young man living out in California now, played 13 years overseas. So he shifted gears after playing football one season. He had bulked up. He had to lose weight. This wasn't in the story, so this is like an extra. An Iowa State manager, I believe, was from Iceland. That's where he started his overseas career. Kind of said, you know, Stevie, there might have a chance for you to play basketball in Iceland. He's like, Iceland? I just spent 4 years in Ames, Iowa.
Yeah, and he's from Mississippi.
I don't want to go to Iceland. But he went. I think he was a league MVP. I think they won a title. Went on a long career in Spain, which is where some of the most elite basketball is played in Europe. Brief stint in Argentina, where I think he got hurt, and then Germany to close it out. And that's a long career, and it just speaks to his adaptability and his, humility, because he said there were times where he wanted to quit. You know, you're playing under Floyd, you're playing under Eustachy. Those guys are going to be tough on you every single second in practice and in games and anywhere else they might see you. And he said he grew from that, but there were times, maybe I wanted to quit, maybe I wanted to transfer, but you stick through it. You realize the special opportunity that you have with the guys around you. And just another great guy to talk to. I'm privileged to be able to work on this series.
Well, and you did a great job. And anyone out there that's listening, jump on the website, take a look, read it. Stevie Johnson, I think people always appreciate him for being just one of those guys. 6'4", played great defense, rebounded. I'm looking here, his junior year averaged 7 rebounds, senior year averaged 6. And he actually was a pretty good passer, too. He had 1 year he averaged 3 assists a game. But he was never a prolific scorer. You know, 9-8 points a game. I mean, he would score a little bit. But when he went overseas, and you go back and look, he turned himself into a guy that – score 20 a game and some of those years he had. That was the thing that always stood out to me when you'd follow this guy's career. He went from not scoring at all at Iowa State to being this kind of a big time scorer on the national, you know, landscape in basketball.
Yeah, and that was because of the role that was asked of him.
Yeah.
I think he said going into his final season with Eustachy that he was looking at, he'd always been a 3 or a 4, and he looked at how it was all scheduled out, and he was going to be a 4 or a 5. And he was like, how in the world am I going to be a 4 or a 5? But every role that was thrown at, play great defense.
Yep.
Get that rebound. Don't shoot. He said he forgot how to shoot. Because it was something that you just don't do. I mean, he didn't hit many threes. He said he'd always hit threes before. I think he was 3 of 23 in his career at Iowa State because he was probably only shooting half quarters at the buzzer.
Yeah. He shot 13% on threes during his time at Iowa State. And you're right, 3 for 23. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That is amazing. For a 6'4 guy, can you imagine in today's world a 6'4 guy only going 3 for 23 in 4 years and playing as many minutes as he did? I mean, this is a guy that averaged 30 minutes a game most games.
It's because of all the other things he did. You know, the roles he was asked to play, he played them as he told me, if that's what he's allowed to do, he's going to play him better than anybody else.
And he did. No, great job as always, Rob.
Thanks,
great
man.
Job. One thing we want to hit on quick, too, before we go. Once again, thanks to Heartland Flags for sponsoring the first ever Graycast. Just a monumental day.
It is.
An extraordinary day.
It's been
day.
Great. We got coffee. We're in a beautiful palatial studio here.
We are. The Cyclone Fanatic Studio. Just got done having a meeting, too, Rob, for CFTV Live. We got some big things coming. I've kind of hinted on it a little bit on CFTV. where we're going to be able to put the actual videos instead of having the TV behind us. We'll be able to hit a button. We'll have pre-recorded videos. So Jeff Woody will be geeking out like he does, where he will be circling like John Madden the screen,
oh,
right?
Nice.
Yeah, it's going to be big time. So I'm looking forward to that. But one more thing I want to hit on too. We had National Signing Day last Wednesday, which obviously is bringing us to the recruiting party at Thunderhead tomorrow. You were there for National Signing Day. You got a chance to interview Maddie, and you got a chance to interview Matt Campbell. What stood out from what those two said to you?
Well, the most jarring thing is something Campbell said, and it's very jarring in a good way, and that's that Eaton is basically one of the jewels of the class, and he provides the Cyclones with a, quote, another number one type, unquote, player at wide receiver. When you got Alan Lazard, when you've got Deshaunte Jones with his breakthrough as a true freshman last year, when you got Trevor Ryan, you know what he can give you in a lot of different ways. Akeem Butler, so many guys. When you're talking about another number one type with the newcomer that came in at mid-year, that's extremely exciting. Then you couple in what you know is a disciplined background, growing up in a military family, his dad, an officer in the Navy, spent time on Guam, and went to Temple, didn't really work out there, went the JUCO route, found a way to, you know, overcome some things there and find his way to Iowa State after retracting even, you know, maybe bigger offers and interest in the meantime. That's really exciting. Plus, he's just a really interesting guy to talk to. Likes poetry, and anytime you can throw, when you're a creative type and you hear someone else is a creative type in addition to a great athlete, that piques your interest. It was exciting to hear what Campbell had to say, and very interesting to talk to Matt Eaton as well.
Nice. You know, the when Campbell says we have someone we see as another number one, when you already have the Alan Lazard and the Deshaunte Jones, I mean, it's hard not to get really, really excited about the weapons Iowa State's going to have. And an offense that I've quite frankly have said is going to be the next best offense Iowa State's ever had in my lifetime. So that's exciting. You know, I hate talking up wide receivers this much, even a Deshaunte Jones, because the one thing that's going to be important to see with Campbell and the staff, and I think they're going to do a really, really good job of it, but we got to see, is development. We've seen freshman wide receivers come in and have success before. Darius Darks, people forget, had almost 50 catches as a freshman.
Yeah.
And I think if you look back, it might have been his freshman year might have been his best year. I don't think we're going to see that at Deshaunte Jones. I think he's going to continue to get better. But that's one thing to watch for. And people listening, this is our third time doing this take here, this last take, because we were having a little audio issues. You mentioned it in one of the other takes too, DeVario Montgomery being a kind of a comparison for Matt Eaton. The one thing that stood out to me with Campbell is how Matt Eaton is constantly in there working the jugs machine, mm-hmm. and his drive to be the best he can possibly be. And I think DeVario Montgomery, one thing he didn't lack was talent. He had the talent. From everything I hear, though, he didn't have this drive that all of a sudden it sounds like Matt Campbell is saying that Matt Eaton has. So that makes me really excited. The thought process of Jacob Park, who I'm really high on, throwing to these three receivers, plus you bring in Chase Allen next year, man, I could not be more excited for what this offense could become.
Indeed. And DeVario, the commitment, I think he was talented enough that he kind of thought, okay, I'm here. I've done some things.
Yep.
I've had a big game or two. I'm fine. Well, we see what happens when you settle into that kind of mode.
It's the Big 12.
In a Coach
it's
Campbell
hard.
Situation.
Yeah.
You know, it's that competition that Campbell talks about. You want the most competition. You want guys saying, I better up my game or this guy's going to take some real estate from me on the field. You know, it's going to be harder for me to be looked to for catches, or it's going to be harder for me to get carries, or it's going to be harder for me to get snaps, period, because you've got player X, Y, and Z over there, not just maybe one guy that's competing hard for the same type of stuff that you want. And that's exactly what builds a better team. And I agree, what should be a more explosive offense than Iowa State's had in a very long time.
Very, very long time. Well, Rob, I would say our first podcast, the Great Cast, was a success.
I ultimately, that depends on our wonderful listeners, but I think in terms of how we work together.
We can, no matter what they say, me and you were calling this a success.
That's true.
Yeah.
Except for the audio issues, I absolutely, it was a success. And good job by you operating everything
Well, you know, thanks. It's my first time really, truly operating it, so it's a little touch and go, but we got the job done. Once again, people stop by, see us tomorrow at Thunderhead.
Absolutely.
Rob said he's buying everyone a drink. You said that.
But there is a CF account, a tab.
Oh, yeah. You know, Rob, once again, the podcast is brought to you by our good friends at Heartland Flags. You know what Heartland Flags has? I know you're a Red Sox fan, but you're also a Cubs fan.
No, Cubs primarily. Red Sox are kind of like my 1A.
Because your dad was a Red Sox fan? Yep. That's yep. what it does. Okay. You know what they have there? Heartland flags now. You know how everybody's loving flying the W?
Mm-hmm.
They have Iowa State Cardinal and Gold Ws.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be nice to have like one of each.
Yeah. So when Iowa State would have beat Kansas the Fog Allen, I would have put that puppy right out. I would have flown that. I would have flown the W for sure.
Absolutely.
So you know, any Iowa State fan out there that you know likes Iowa State and the Cubbies and wants to fly that W, the Cardinal and Gold W, I'd recommend going to Heartland Flags, heartlandflags.com. Check them out, or you can stop at their store over on the south side of Des Moines. Tell them Cyclone Fanatics sent you. They're good people over there, and we'll be back next week, Rob.
Look forward to it, man.
Awesome. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.